Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle. www.serotalk.com, a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 131 for November 5th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Stonkamp.
Welcome back, everyone, to yet another Serotalk Podcast, where there's been a lot that's happened in the past week. A lot of it tech, but a lot of it not tech. You know, there are things that happen in life that remind us occasionally that our little shiny toys maybe aren't quite as important as we think they are sometimes. Agreed?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And it's hard to run them without electricity or power, as most people have found out on the East Coast. Our thoughts and good tidings to everyone who is listening, who is still recovering on the East Coast from Hurricane Sandy. Our own Patrick was there in New York, is still in New York now as we record this.
It's amazing how much technology, I mean, we know it impacts every aspect of our lives, but when it actually is not available and, you know, we are completely without it or mostly without it, it really hits home. For example, wireless services, cell phones, that sort of thing were really heavily impacted and are finally just now starting to come back online.
Yeah, Verizon claims that it has done pretty well. There was basically 94% uptime or connectivity or whatever with the Verizon cell towers. I don't know if that's true or not, but the FCC is releasing reports about how quickly things are able to be brought back up after this. And they're bringing in kind of cell towers on wheels, and they are doing lots of repairs. And of course, some things, the electrical repairs have to happen first before they can move on to do other things. And so the FCC is releasing reports each day about how quickly things are improving. And it's apparently not quite as bad as it could have been.
Right.
AT&T and T-Mobile are actually sharing parts of their towers and trying to do their best to kind of provide coverage faster. And like you said, the portable towers are no stranger to South by Southwest. They actually have these things and they bring them down to major events where they think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the network. So in Austin, you're used to seeing those portable towers, and it's neat to see that they're being used in other ways now that are not related to a gigantic music festival. We also want to point out that there are all sorts of our friends and family over there, such as the Seeing Eye and other related things like the Guild over there for blind individuals and many lighthouses. So please keep your eyes and ears open to calls for help and donations at this time of crisis. Also, make sure you head over to Red Cross, which is redcross.org. They need blood very badly. And they need other donations to be able to purchase supplies. This, unfortunately, will take a while. Those of us who are used to living on the third coast and have gone through a couple of hurricanes know that it's not something that happens to recovery very quickly, and that this will be something that will probably be, well, hopefully it won't take all that long, but it's certainly weeks and months. And so definitely, if you have the ability to give, you want to check out Red Cross. The American Red Cross are doing some amazing things.
You can actually do this through iTunes, which is a really nice thing. And before you ask, no, Apple does not get a cut of this. 100% of the donations that are done through iTunes do go to the American Red Cross. And so that's something to check out as well.
In other Apple news, the iPad mini is being reviewed now, and we're starting to get a look at it. People are actually starting to be able to get their hands on them. And our first article along that line is that it's a great little tablet. It just happens to cost a lot.
Yes.
it's kind of something we've, you know, talked about and discussed, but it's just really being confirmed. One of the things I thought was interesting about this review is the discussion about the difficulty or a little more uncomfortable typing on this smaller tablet, actually.
I was surprised by that as well, because I've got the Nexus 7, which is slightly smaller, and I think it's perfect for typing on, but I suppose if you're accustomed to a very large 10-inch tablet going down in size, your muscle memory is not trained to that at all. So perhaps it is difficult just because you're not used to it, maybe. This article is one of many that's basically saying the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great tablet. It costs a whole lot. If you really want to remain in the Apple ecosystem and you want something smaller, you're gonna pay for it. But if you don't necessarily care so much about remaining in this ecosystem, but you want that 7-inch form factor, there are certainly cheaper options that may even offer, you know, a bit better experience, at least in terms of hardware, better display, faster processor, that sort of thing.
Again, it bears repeating, buying the first generation of any iDevice or iMac or whatever is always a gamble. Sitting here next to my iPad 1, you know, which was, you know, kind of made irrelevant by the Retina display, there's a possibility that next year, in order to sell more iPad minis, they'll release a newer, better, upgraded version. And so jumping in the first couple of months, 7 months, in the case of the iPad 3, there is always a danger of doing that kind of thing. And again, you can say, okay, that's keeping up with the Joneses. As long as it works for you, as long as you find the device that, you know, meets your needs, that's fine. Now, with that said, we've also been reading about the newest iPad, the iPad 4th generation. The chip inside that is actually double that of the iPad 3rd generation, which the collector's item, as we like to jokingly call it. And this is something that I kind of sort of said was going to happen with the changes in chip design and speed. Where that comes in, and I've been reading a lot of people kind of armchair quarterbacking here, is, in fact, Allison Mervis even said it on Sarah Spective's last week, that she had spoken to somebody at one of the iStores, and they had said, well, that only comes into place if you're playing games and blah, blah, blah. No, it comes into place when you're doing Siri. It comes into place when you're doing dictation. There's a lot of accessibility concerns when you start talking about chips and speed and RAM and how fast the processor moves things around. And it's, you know, a physical cliff when you start having gigantic, you know, moves between what a chip can and cannot do, especially since Apple does a lot of that system on a chip stuff. They'll start skewing iOS to work better on those newer chips. Any of you still using a iPhone 4S or a 4 or even, oh gosh, I hope not, 3GS with iOS 6, know that, you know, they start really working that software to be more compatible and faster on newer chipsets.
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot. If I had purchased what I'm going to call the iPad 3, for lack of a better name, you know, and 7 months
the
later, they
came out. The new iPad, you mean?
That one, yeah. Yes. You know, would I take the, oh, well, it's okay, mine still works approach, or would I be a little hacked off? And we've had some discussions in both camps of late, and I think I would have to lean toward the feeling a little bit chapped category, honestly. That's not very long. It's just not very long at all. But it happened, I totally see what you're coming at there, Joe. When you think about when you triple click the home button and you turn on VoiceOver, you've slowed your device down considerably. So that faster processing speed does matter.
Sure. When you're surfing the web, when you're doing anything processor intensive, I mean, you are taking up resources by just having VoiceOver active, even more so when you're pushing Braille display and the like.
Yep.
That happens on a PC. It's just, you know, another program running. So having that extra beefier hardware, absolutely. And for those of us who want to use, I don't know, Zoom along with VoiceOver, yeah, absolutely. The more to have, the better. Certainly not going to hurt. But the question is what happens as you go forward, right? If you already have an iPad 1 or an older piece of hardware from Apple, you're already seeing in the iStore you know, don't run this if you have this hardware, and that list is just going to get bigger moving on. So it, especially if you had a device that was only running for 7 months. And again, everything gets taken over. Everything gets obsolescent. But the same thing could be said of executives. Do you know you could actually replace executives over time? Sometimes there's a built-in obsolescence. Apple thinks so because there were some shakeups.
You're obsolete.
Yeah. Yeah. We're computerizing. Remember that old commercial in the 80s? I'm sorry, Bob.
Right.
Well, in this case, we're compartmentalizing, and I'm sorry, Scott Forstall, you're no longer needed here. Your services were inadequate in the case of iOS Maps and, to some respect, Siri. And this wasn't the only shakeup at Apple. There seems to be a couple of musical chair moments here.
Yeah, John Browett is out as well. He was head of retail, and he's gone. Now, what's interesting about Scott Forstall is that apparently, at least I think, I mean, this could be a rumor. It was stated as fact in articles that I've read, but the gist of it is that he would not put his signature on the apology letter about Maps. And so Tim Cook was the one who had to do that. And so, all right, you won't sign. How about you resign?
Yeah, that's, I've been sitting around the last couple of days trying to think about why you wouldn't go ahead and put your signature at the bottom of that. I mean, he has to be smart enough to know this isn't turning out real well. This hasn't been a great release of this software.
reading this stuff, he's been with Steve Jobs since Next, right? And he came over and he was a confidant. And he had even made claims, by what I'm reading on The Verge and other places, that he would, you know, take over for Tim Cook one day.
Oh.
So there were stories that in San Francisco, people were happier about Scott Forstall's exit than winning the World Series with the San Francisco Giants. So there
That's
was
bad.
A lot of exuberation. Johnny Ive, if you are a fan of Johnny, will be taking over a lot more of the human interface type stuff. So there's talk that there's going to be a revamped iOS, which I think kind of sort of needs it at this point. So there's some unification. And if you're one of those guys who says, oh no, the Mac is becoming more like iOS, well, I would not upgrade in the future because it looks like that's really what's going to happen. There's going to be kind of a refresh all the way across on software, on the way things that are working. And I think you'll start to see that with iTunes 11.
Yes, it is delayed until the end of November. They basically said, hey, we want to get this absolutely right before we spit it out to you. So we're going to take a little time and make that happen. This is going to be a lot more iOS-ified from what I understand. So the visual elements are getting way redesigned, and they're going for a cleaner interface. I'm hoping that this is true because iTunes is not fun for anyone, and this is not just about accessibility. It's not good. It really isn't. No. So they're going to redesign this to be a little more like iOS, so that's going to be familiar to everyone, and we'll just have to see how all that shakes out at the end of November.
Definitely be interesting to see how the accessibility of iTunes changes on the PC and the Mac. There's going to be two different camps to look at there. Well, how about iOS 6.01, or actually 6.0.1? There we go. I've not installed
right
it yet. Yeah, doesn't it though? Yeah. Ricky, have you had a chance to update yet?
I haven't. This is probably the first time when I wasn't updating my phone as we record this. That kind of became a tradition.
You broke the trend
for a while.
Yeah.
But I'm not doing that this time. There are a few fixes, mostly some Wi-Fi bugs and some updated security, a couple of other things. For those of you who are using an iPhone 5, though, your experience is going to be a little different, and I'll be walking through this soon myself. Apparently, there's some sort of bug or something such that there is a need to install an installer app before you're able to update the software over the air. Now, you can do this from iTunes and have the same experience that you always have with iTunes, but if you're doing this over the air with the iPhone 5, you'll need to install this app. It'll prompt you to do that. It's going to reboot the phone, and then you can proceed with actually updating to the latest software.
How Android of them. This feels very much like what happened when I jumped over to Gingerbread on a phone that I had. There's a lot of issues with carriers, so that makes a lot of sense in that they may have to do that because of the chipset on board with the radios and stuff. Maybe it has to turn something off in order to do that. Whereas if you're connecting to iTunes, it's a straight direct push over your Lightning connector to be able to update and do that kind of stuff. So that makes in some ways kind of sense. And it's going to happen when you start to have one type of phone with all these different carriers in them, you know, between the world GSM stuff and then all the stuff in Verizon and 3G, LTE, and all these other alphabet soup kind of things. So that makes a lot of sense. Now, one of the things that I've been reading is, you know, a lot about, is this the end? You know, has Apple tipped, you know, all these glitches and, you know, these things just don't work and Siri and on and on and on and on. And now the stock is kind of sort of taking some hits. And some people have even said, you know, wow, look at how they did this move when the stock markets weren't open. And some people think that, and they weren't the only ones to do this. Facebook and Google and some others made some announcements. There was even the Microsoft takes over Netflix rumor that came out while the markets were down. I don't know. I've seen the press kind of turn a little bit more. There are, you know, people actually coming out and criticizing innovation, lack thereof, or the fact that, you know, these things aren't turning out fast enough and that the iPad mini is a mistake. But you know what? They should have done an iPad mini because they're getting killed in the 7-inch market. How do we feel about this? Because I know you guys are seeing the same articles I am.
I think that it's time for this to happen, because once a company gets to a particular size and a particular level of popularity, something always happens to burst the bubble a little bit and bring things back into some sort of perspective. And so what we're seeing now, I feel like, is about to be an overcorrection, which will then smooth out and people will think Apple is great, but not the answer to life, the universe, and everything, as I think was true in the past. So what we're seeing is just a rebalancing, I feel like.
I think that's well said. I mean, there's no way that Apple executives are all just sitting around wringing their hands in desperation. I mean, yeah, I'm sure they're taking this very seriously, all of it. But there are some extremely smart people there that have been successful for a very long time and would like to continue to be. And I suspect that they are taking a good hard look at a lot of areas of the company and probably have been for some time and maybe have seen some of this coming. They may be smart enough to know that they were going to take some hits in some areas.
I don't know. It just feels very much like Apple is mortal now, between going all the way back to the Genius ads and some other kind of missteps this year. And certainly there's other mistakes. Mobile Me, the iPod Hi-Fi is so good I threw away all my stereo equipment is the classic Steve Jobs moment. But every company has its time in the sun, and sometimes it's generational, and, you know, everybody has a rebirth, you know. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. We're always interested in your comments. Leave them over at resources@saratalk.com or drop us an iReport. But like Jamie said, you know, things change, and we are nowhere near done with change. We have so much more to cover, because that's just the tip of the iceberg. There was a bunch of other news to come up, and we'll discuss that about Google, Microsoft, and of course the roundabout right after the break.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet, with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech. the Accessibility Anywhere people.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 131. And I love being able to talk about candy, or jelly beans at least. We've got an update to the current version of Jelly Bean. We're at 4.2 now. That was announced by Google. A lot of people thought that this was going to move to Key Lime Pie, but no, we're looking at another iteration of Jelly Bean with some pretty interesting things. It's going to take a little while for us lowly Nexus 7 people to see this update because Google was concentrating on the new Nexus 10 tablet as well as the update to the Nexus phone. So now we're at the Nexus 4, correct?
Yeah, Nexus 4, Nexus 10, Nexus 7, three sizes, all one. Google is kind of paraphrasing their blog post that kind of outlays some of this. This announcement was supposed to come out publicly during the time in which Hurricane Sandy had made its way across. In fact, the place where they were actually meant to hold the event was a major evacuation center. So Google chose to go ahead and make these announcements on their blog post because the equipment had already shipped and NDAs were lifting. So they went ahead and made the announcement, along with the idea that there is now a Nexus 7 32 gig version, and I believe there's a wireless version of that coming as well. Those were all released in this big announcement. 4.2 also has some security updates, the ability to do multiple logins, and a whole bunch more, all about Android, which is a Twitch show, is a great thing to listen to if you want to learn more than you possibly can handle about Jelly Bean 4.2 and all the different devices. Ricky and I both have Nexus 7, so we're eagerly awaiting 4.2's launch onto our devices.
Well, if you thought Windows 8 might not be very popular at its launch, you might want to think again. 4 million sold in the first 3 days. That's not bad, I'm thinking.
4 million upgrades.
Yeah.
Now, to put that into context real quick, and to fuel the fire.
Here we go.
Okay, so last quarter, according to the Apple's earning call, that was 4.9 million Macs were sold in 3 months. So in 3 days, 4 million copies of Windows 8 were sold. Just, you know, leaving that
well,
out there.
Well, yes, but come on, we're talking about a $39 outlay as opposed to $1,300. So let's not compare apples to something.
But Mountain Lion is only $20.
Yeah, yeah. Quickly on.
Let's talk about another topic that is so loved by the blind community at the moment. Windows 8 phone. Actually, no.
Meh.
Windows 8 phone that apparently does not contain Narrator, the screen reader. Now, we actually kind of had some knowledge of this for several weeks and couldn't discuss it as much as maybe we would kind of like to have. But apparently there's not the same operating system on the Surface and Windows 8 and Windows Phone. Have I got that kind of close to right there, Joe?
Yeah, three different flavors of Windows 8.
Okay. And so for whatever reason, Narrator is not on Windows Phone.
Nope. But it is on the Surface, and yes, Mike Calvo will be joining us soon talking about his thoughts on the Surface. And I want to reiterate, we talked about this last week, the current Surface tablets are using RT, so you're not going to be able to run other screen readers on them, at least not unless they have been designed as Windows Store apps. So can't install standard Windows apps on these tablets. But we're going to be looking at Windows 8 Pro something something?
Yeah, it's starting to sound like Jelly Bean. It's that new LTE DLP 506. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so really it's easier to look at it from this point. Windows 8 is Windows 8. Runs on desktops. You have standard and pro. That's nothing outside the ordinary. It uses Windows Store apps, and Windows Store are the types of apps that run on Windows RT and on Surface. So every app that you're used to running on Windows 7 and Windows XP still run on Windows 8 or Windows 8 Pro. You have the ability to use the tablet apps or the phone apps in some cases, if they decide to code that way, in Windows 8 and Windows 8 Pro. When you get to the tablets, there is Windows RT, which is only using the Windows Store apps, period. Now, there is certain things like Command Prompt, and if you connect a keyboard to it, as they did on Windows Weekly, they actually were doing all sorts of keyboard shortcuts and bringing up different things that are still there. It's just that there's no real desktop to speak of that would run Windows 8 desktop apps. Now, to confuse things a little further, and because it's Microsoft, that's what we do, Microsoft has Windows 8 Surface, which is the ability to do Windows RT apps that we've just talked about, and then Windows Pro / Windows 8 desktop apps. So it is a merging of the two. Now, you're probably thinking, okay, why would I go and get one of these devices when I could turn around and go get a laptop with a touchscreen and have the exact same experience on just Windows 8? That's what Microsoft is hoping you get, is that no matter which one of these particular ways you're going to go, you're going to have this new tile interface there. You only learn one interface, and you're able to use a lot of these apps on multiple devices, where, you know, this is a little different between, you know, what you have with, say, iOS and Mac. With iOS and Mac, you do have kind of the same things, where you have some apps that are just iOS apps, some that are just iPad apps, some that are just iPhone apps, and some that are universal that run on all those devices. And of course, you have Mac apps that don't necessarily share information, although they can through iCloud, to be able to run on just the Mac. And what everybody's kept saying over the years is, oh man, they're going to mesh iOS and Mac together. Well, Windows did. This is a mushing of the two. This is Microsoft trying to have their iOS and their Mac too.
This is only partly going to be successful, though. I've been reading a couple of articles, one of which we'll have in the show notes, and it's talking about how the touch interface confuses new users, and it's very frustrating. And a lot of times what can happen is that somebody uses these tablets with a smart cover that has, say, a little trackpad on it and the keyboard, and then you take that off and, oh, wait, now it's a tablet. What do? I have to figure out these gestures and stuff, whereas people are used to navigating Windows with a mouse-driven interface. And so the transition is going to be interesting, and it's actually been suggested that users who get one of these tablets, they can buy the smart cover for it, but don't use that for a month or two. Get used to the tablet as a tablet. That way, the switching back and forth between the tablet and the laptop or tap-top or whatever you want to call it is going to be a little easier.
Well, but you know, to be fair, accessibility-wise, the same thing happens with iOS. And not everybody knew exactly how to get to App Switcher unless somebody showed you or kind of explained it to you. There's a lot of what's called first-time training, where you show somebody for the first time and then they kind of sort of get it and go, oh, okay, that's where that is. Microsoft is going to have to do a lot of that. There's going to be a lot of kind of first-time training. But the idea is that if a company flips over and does Windows Phone 8 and does Surface and does Windows Pro, that they only have to teach them the gesture to get to the charms bar once, because then they'll know it on all the different platforms that they choose to do. Where it gets more confusing to me personally is to remember that you have, you know, little swipey places on all four corners of the screen that do something contextually, where in iOS we don't have that, and it's much more of a, you know, press, hold, long hold, or tap the home button and all that. With Windows 8, especially on Surface, there's all that and more. That's where it's going to take a little bit of retraining and stuff. The other part here, and I don't know if I'm making a mountain out of a molehill, I understand what people are saying about Windows Phone 8. It concerns me, but at the same time, it doesn't concern me. We're talking about less than 3% of the market share currently.
And unless right now.
Yeah, unless something dramatically happens, and that is possible. You know, I think a slow start is better than no start. at all. Now, for low vision, there is some accessibility. You can enlarge tiles and you can do some magnification. And Windows Phone 8 is not exactly Windows 8 or Windows 8 RT. So Microsoft didn't make it any easier for themselves. To make it even worse, they didn't release the SDK until this week.
Here's the thing, though, and I am concerned because with BlackBerry kind of going away, now who's going to be number three in this market, and who might have a chance to really rise through the ranks in terms of enterprise? Now, Android has just released in 4.2 a lot of enterprise level things as far as security and various other functions that could make them a contender in the enterprise space. And Apple was actually never great at that until a couple of years ago. They had a lot of catching up to do, which is why BlackBerry was the clear winner for a while in enterprise. Microsoft, I think enterprise wants to like Microsoft, and I don't see RIM making a huge comeback here. So as you yourself have said, in terms of employment and what might you have to use on the job and that kind of thing, I'm not really angry about Windows Phone 8 because I'm in the market for a new phone right now, but it's more that accessibility needs to come to this platform, especially if it's going to gain popularity in enterprise.
What? Use my own words against me? How dare... No, I agree with you. And let's be fair here, okay? Apple did not have VoiceOver in iPhone 1. Android did not have TalkBack in the first version of Jelly Bean. We've come to understand that it's great if accessibility is built in on day one. It's certainly something we should push for, strive for. Is it to be expected now on every new product? I don't know. I don't have that answer. I don't have that concept. And it gets back to built-in versus bolt-on. Certainly Narrator in Surface is awesome. You know, from reports, from what we're seeing on YouTube, from what we know. But that's actually based upon years and years and years of Windows. Windows Phone 8 is completely new. And so I don't even think we, you know, I don't even think that I can get too mad at Microsoft because they weren't even finished with Windows Phone 8. And Windows Phone 7 was a stopgap. But I know what you're saying, and I know we're going to get lots of cards and letters about what I just said.
So were we too hard on the Kindle then for not being accessible?
The Kindle's a whole nother matter because they forked. Because they took Android and then said, you know, we like what you started here, but we're going to put a big skin on this. And, you know, accessibility, yeah, what's that?
But I think Microsoft has done a similar thing. I've argued not just because of accessibility, but why wouldn't you have put Windows RT on the phone instead of trying to keep this Windows Phone 7 alive when you had something that would be perfectly reasonable to replace on the phone, and it includes accessibility, and you have a lot less to support as a company? That would have made sense. And
remember,
I can't
swallow
the... Remember,
this is the company that killed the kin in 1 month.
Well, this is true, yes.
You know,
but I can't swallow the idea of, you know, VoiceOver wasn't there until version 3 and Android wasn't there until version 1.6. All of that is true, but unlike both Android and Apple, Microsoft, whether they have always practiced what they preached completely or not, Microsoft has always understood or at least paid lip service to accessibility. So for them, it wasn't waking up one day and going, oh, you know, accessibility is a good thing. They've always known. They just chose not to do it in this way.
When you're a large company, sometimes you make some strange moves, like releasing an iPad, you know, without Retina. You get stuck into some things and you just throw it on the wall. Google is especially good at this. We've talked about that on the podcast once or twice about, you know, just seeing what sticks. And Android having to come round to a lot of things because it got popular. So I don't know. I mean, we'll know more when Firefox OS comes out and we have the Firefox OS phone. Does it have built-in accessibility? I mean, that's really what we're coming to understand is built-in versus bolt-on and what it should have out of the gate. And maybe it means we have to be more proactive with these companies. The problem is that all of them have adopted the Apple secrecy doctrine. And so in a lot of cases, we'll never know until here it is. The good news is that if you don't want to deal with any of that, Windows 7 is taking over. So if you don't want to deal with Windows 8 or anything involving the number 8, you'd rather just hang on till 9 or Service Pack 1 in some cases, you can just hang in there for Windows 7, for they have taken over the once dominant XP.
About
after
time,
11 years, come on.
Well, 11 years and wow. A Vista later.
Yeah. So how easy is it to get Windows 7 computers right now? I mean, can you go into Walmart still?
And, I would run and get them now because they'll be at a premium very, very soon. Now, if you have Windows 8 Pro, you still have the ability to do downgrade rights in enterprise situations. So it's not impossible. But I'd run in to go to Newegg now or start stockpiling if you really, really love Windows 7 because all companies do this. The minute that the new thing comes out, they take the old one off the market and off it goes. iPad 3.
We actually had an iReport basically talking about that very thing, whether this person wanted to go to a Windows 8 computer or a Windows 7 computer. Joe, before we actually leave this subject, and we shall shortly, someone asked me in Samnet chat, does Joe like Windows 8 or not? And I honestly wasn't quite sure how to answer that question.
Depends on the day.
That's exactly what I told them, actually.
Yeah.
He doesn't not like it. There you go. Right. There's
I'm
the double
tired of looking
you.
At it from a testing standpoint and adding features to it. You know, we released our own support for Windows 8 with System Access. We keep adding more things, like we added live tile support. So when you're sitting on a tile like mail, it tells you what mail you've had. And if you go over to store, it tells you how many things you have in the store. I'm just kind of, and this happens to me if you've been reading my blog for years when I used to blog. This happens to me every time there's a new operating system. I just get to burnout focus. It's just like, oh, God, do I have to really go in there again? And
like politics, you mean? Oh, did I just say that?
Yeah. Hello, November 6th. But what I said on Twitter was the new time to make the donuts for me was, I got to go test Windows 8. You know, yeah. You just get tired of seeing it. And I'll feel the same way about Office 2013. Is when you work in accessibility, sometimes, you know, ooh, the new blah blah is here. Oh, good. We get to go test that to see if it works. Hooray, the new blah blah is here, everybody. Party at my house. So I'm excited about it, but I'm not using it. To be full disclosure, I'm not using it on my main production box because there's a lot of things that I will have to retrain my brain. Plus, I would rather use Windows 8 on newer hardware. Like, you know, the experience that's being said is a touchscreen, right? Mm-hmm. And I need a laptop or a desktop with a touchscreen in order to have the Windows 8 experience. And that is nothing new. Before anybody says anything, same thing happened in XP, same thing happened in Vista, same thing happened in 7. You will have much better experience when you have hardware that has that Windows 7 logo on it.
Yeah.
It is worth mentioning, and we kind of glossed over it this week and didn't say a whole lot last week. We were busy talking about everyone else's Windows 8 support. And I suppose in our minds, we were kind of thinking, well, yeah, it goes without saying, we're on Windows 8. And that is, in fact, true. System Access is compatible with Windows 8. So if this is something where you want to take the plunge and you were thinking, oh, no, all these other screen readers work with Windows 8, but System Access does not. Nope, we got you covered.
Yep.
And all those opportunities as well, accessibility anywhere. Where you can not just have System Access, you can have DocuScan Plus and SamNet and System Access all for a low, low, low price, the price of a pizza a month. And that's available. We'll have a link in the show notes that'll explain more about accessibility anywhere.
Talking more about assistive technology, won't spend a lot of time on this, but Freedom Scientific loses the lawsuit against GW Micro, the patent discussion of the AT community. Of epic proportions, I guess.
Yeah.
Bookmarks on the internet. Wow.
Yeah, this has been going on for a while, the place marker issue. And first it went through and Freedom Scientific did not win initially and they chose to appeal. That has come to an end now and the decision was that no, in fact, this patent was not valid, and so the legalities are at an end here, or rather, the lawsuit is.
I think it just goes back to how complicated this patent discussion is. Honestly, we've talked about that.
Yeah,
so many times.
This is
on this
not
show.
The first time we've talked about patents on no. Sarah Talk. Sadly.
On this show,
it comes
no.
up quite often.
All right.
It's, you know, look at Samsung, look at Apple, look at all the cross-licensing conversation, look at the idea for patent reform. That's certainly something that happens a lot in a lot of discussions. And, you know, it's up to individuals to choose what they think works best for them. Like, I don't know, staying around on Internet Explorer 9 and using JAWS with that.
Yes, Kathy Ann is hard at work. Immersion into Internet Explorer 9 with JAWS 14. A few weeks ago, we mentioned her book on an immersion into system access. So she's immersing herself in a lot of assistive technology as she has for many, many years, actually.
Absolutely. So you can check that out. We'll have a link in the show notes, $80 for that one. And of course, you download the course. It has samples specifically designed for you to be able to look at and see how things work rather than just reading a description of how they work. So good stuff. ACB Radio Tuner also is out. This is version 7. And Jamie, perhaps you could describe what this is because I'm not really familiar with it.
Okay, you've caught me at a moment when I am red-faced because one of the things that has just been added is a live event stream. To be perfectly honest, I'm looking through old emails to find an announcement for the live event stream. I'm not exactly sure what that is. There's ACB Radio Treasure Trove, Cafe, Interactive, Mainstream, and World. Mm-hmm. And so what this new live event stream is, I'm not I know they've been doing a lot of live broadcasting of events like state conventions,
state
that sort of thing,
convention.
On yeah. ACB
right.
Radio World. So I'm wondering if they're going to move that to this live event stream.
That would
very
make sense.
Interesting. So is the tuner basically a piece of software where you can choose from Interactive or Mainstream or whatever it is that you're looking for without using a web page? Or how does this
work? It gives you the time both in UTC, which is for many, many years what ACB Radio used as their default time. In the last couple or 3 years, they switched to Eastern Standard Time as a default time. But you can see your current time as well as what that time would be in UTC. You can choose which of the streams you wish to listen to and also whether you would prefer to connect by broadband or modem stream, what your default player would be. It used to be Winamp was a default. Mm-hmm. Now it would be Windows Media Player. That's more standard. If you didn't have Winamp, the player, the tuner is smart enough to default to Windows Media. Whenever I installed over the older copy of the tuner that I had, I saw that Winamp was checked, so it went ahead and kept that for me. But yeah, it's just an easy, convenient way to find all of the different streams.
Excellent.
Scripting things is a great way of keeping things easier to use as well. Station Playlist has seen some updates.
Station Playlist is an awesome program, and there is a lot there. It's one of those programs that the author of the program, who I believe is in New Zealand, has worked with the blind community for several years on accessibility. And so you wouldn't have to have scripts to use the program, but when you're live on the air and you want to know what time it is, what the current track playing, what the next track is playing, I think this is one of those times when scripting can be a good thing, when it's not an absolute necessity, but there are some usability tweaks that make the experience very pleasant for a visually impaired person. And I've said it several times on this podcast. I'll say it again. Brian Hartgen for JAWS, Jeff Bishop with GW Micro's WindowEyes have worked together to make sure that their scripts, which are both free, work very comparably with Station Playlist.
Speaking of Brian Hartgen and scripts, version 1 of scripts for the Tween Twitter client have been released. And there's also a blog post from Brian Hartgen that we'll have in the show notes that covers some very interesting things. The scripts were kind of brought about because of an issue that happened with Twitter. And some clients were returning a 411 error whenever people tried to post to them. So essentially, the clients became unusable in terms of posting tweets. You could still read them, but the primary clients in the blind community that were all based on Quitter, so the Cube, Twitmonger, those types of things, were not working. And this really brought home, I think, the need to have an accessible mainstream client that I think a lot of people have somewhat ignored because we had something that worked for us all. But the idea that there isn't a mainstream client that is perfectly accessible is a little bit disturbing. But Brian has taken a step in the right direction as far as writing scripts for the tween interface. And you can check that out and download those, as well as look at his blog post in the show notes.
It's funny you say that, because sometimes we get into that mode of pushing iOS apps to be accessible and not using a blindness app per se. And it seems like when we get to certain parts of Windows, it's like, yeah, if it's a mainstream, great. But if not, I got this with all this other stuff. And if I prop all this other stuff up, it'll work really, really good. Oh, wait. Somebody stopped developing for it?
The thing is, I really love the Cube interface.
Yes.
Even if there were a mainstream client, I probably wouldn't use it all the time, because I have enough Windows open on my desktop as it is that the idea of alt-tabbing over to check Twitter quickly seems like it seems a little less convenient for me than just using keystrokes to access this app that really doesn't have a visual interface. But with that said, I think we need to have the choice between a blindness specific and a mainstream app. We don't need to be choosing the blindness specific app only because it's the one that's most accessible.
And the downside to the Cube and the Quitter forks, all of them, is when they quit working, it's a little harder to, I guess you can go into,
or,
it's a little harder to
shut
Twitter
them down changes, sometimes. As in the case recently where Twitter just made some changes and said, third-party clients, go away, smack.
Yeah, true.
And that's part of the problem, too, is that if you're dependent on any of these major social networks, Facebook, Twitter, you're very subservient to their wishes or their choices. And those may not be based on what we need for accessibility. And so that's the other side of that, too. It's just as bad as if you make an app that's really killer, and then Google or Apple come by and take over your business model. You know, it's like, hey, you know what? That's a great idea. That'll fit in perfect over here. It should really happen that way for accessibility. That's certainly what some people think that should happen to Flexi. Flexi is actually getting a round of funding and becoming more popular even as we speak, and branching out to other platforms.
This is so cool. These guys have really made it big, and I get all warm and fuzzy when I think about that. They began Flexi because they saw a need, the blindness community. They saw that, hey, we could make typing easier for this group. But even while they were developing for the blindness community, they were really thinking universal design. They understood that it's not just blind people who can't look at their phones. There are times when we're using our phones eyes free, regardless of whether we have sight or not. And so Flexi then got funding. They actually got $900,000, which is great. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be using this to make this app cross-platform. And they're also, again, the goal is to make this something universal rather than something blindness specific. And I think, you know, everybody wins.
That is just awesome. And, you know, if you look at it from the standpoint of how big is your valley, how big is your virtual buffer, you can find out by listening to the podcast from Apple Viz on an introduction of iOS 6 maps. Now, I have not listened to this, so I don't have any spoilers to say if they got lost or not, but there's certainly that available. The Apple Viz guys do some great deep dives, and I respect that. I think that's awesome, because as I've said here on our podcast, we're afraid sometimes to do deep dives because those apps change very, very quickly, and making some of that stuff very stale if you don't just do the surface level and talk about controls and where things are, just discuss the hardware. So, and it also helps that somebody lives in it, right? If you're going to know something about a product, or if you're going to do something like what Mike Arrigo does, there's a perfect example. There's a guy who lives in Androids, phones, and different versions thereof. So it helps to be able to be into that kind of thing. So another big shout out to those guys at AppleVis for putting out some good podcasts.
Over the Labor Day weekend, we on SPN Radio ran a series of summer programs and kind of billed it as Relive the Summer with our convention specials. And we're kind of having a chance to do that again just a little bit. We have a link here to a 5-part audio series of the NBBA, the National Beatball Association, 2012 World Series Championship game we actually broadcasted on SamNet as well, and they got rained almost out, but they persevered and continued and got pretty wet, I suspect, and finished that game. And it's quite a listen. So I would encourage anyone who's interested in that at all to check out this link and listen to the audio archive of that as well.
Well, there's still just a little bit more of this podcast to go over. We've got the mailbag, and then we're going to find out what happens to a laptop if you just leave it around and some kids learn with it. It's a very interesting story indeed. All that and more to come on Sarah Talk Podcast number 131. Back in a moment.
Hello and welcome to today's lottery drawing. Good luck. And here's today's winning numbers. First one up, it's not yours. Second one, not yours. And another number that's not yours. Okay, this is one number that's yours. It's a 5, but you don't get any money for that. And the final number is not yours.
Yep, so chances are you're not going to hit the lottery anytime soon. Don't get us wrong. The lottery can be fun every now and then. Just please don't rely on it for your future savings. How about this? Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte every day. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Ride your bike instead of buying all that gas. These changes alone can save you thousands a year. Thousands. Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow. Feed that piggy bank. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome once again to Sarah Talk Podcast 131, where it's time to open up the mailbag.
So many letters.
Well, this week, James Muirhead talks about note takers. He has a MacBook and an iPhone 5, but, you know, there are still times when he finds the convenience of the specialized note takers to be rather compelling. James, I get it. I totally get it. I'm using a Braille note that is 3-4 years old. It really kind of needs servicing. I kind of hate to spend the money because part of me would like a nice little Bluetooth Braille display with my nice little iPhone and whatever else I might want to use it for. But there are some things. I'm really going to be interested to see this Access World Notes app when it comes out. And I know there are people who've just kind of brushed it aside before they've even seen it. And, you know, oh, wow, another legacy product. I'm not so sure about that. If they do it right, it could really fill a gap that has been needed for a while.
Yeah, you're right. That is going to be very interesting to see, because I think what people want with note takers is, to some degree, the instant on, and really more than that, as James mentioned here, the ability to easily search through this list of files, and only this list of files, maybe not necessarily your email or the entire device or whatever, but just a list of things that you've written for yourself and find what it is that you're looking for. We have kind of a counterpoint to the note taker discussion. We're going to play a bit from an iReport by Chris Bartlett. He sent in an excellent iReport. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to play the whole thing in this particular episode, but what Chris has to say about the Braille Plus 18 definitely speaks to kind of the other side of what people think about note takers versus mainstream devices.
Hello, Sarah Talk people. This is Chris Bartlett from Pentwater, Michigan.
going back to 129 and the description of the Braille Plus 18, which I believe was called the Orion 18 before it, I keep thinking to myself that this is a product that is about 3 years too late. I, as a former Access Tech teacher, loved the icon when it came out. At the time, to my mind, blew away most of the other note-taking devices or small portable tablet kind of things. However, now in the presence of iOS and Android and one hopes Windows Phone 8, it seems to me that the place of the dedicated note taker, with the exception of Braille output, has been usurped. I mean, yay, this thing runs Android, and so you can use Android apps. But why would I pay $3,600 for something that does that when there are so many less pricey options available in the mainstream market? And in the choice between mainstream technology and specialized technology, if the mainstream technology does most of what the specialized technology does off the shelf, I'm going to choose the mainstream product because it's going to be better supported. Anyway, take care.
Yeah, I agree. I think APH and Level Star have a pretty rough hill to climb. I'm not saying they can't do it, but that's just going to be a tough... That's a high price point. I don't care how you slice it.
It really is. And people are always going to ask the question, why gingerbread? People are always going to ask the question, what's up with this price point? So they're going to have to be very prepared for that and have really good, compelling answers for that. And I don't think this is going to be a device for everyone. There may be a market for it, and you know, that market may or may not be decreasing, but it's all about choice. And that's one of the things that's out there.
But, you know, anybody can fork Android. We just talked about the Kindle and what it does. And, you know, the Kindle has its own app store and things like that. When you leave Android and some of the parameters Google has set for you, you can't necessarily use some of the Google core apps or the app engine, which would be, you know, Gmail or Goggles or things like that. And that's kind of where we are right here, is that it's gingerbread, but it isn't. It's gingerbread in that that's where it came from, but they've made alterations to it and modded it in such a way that it isn't necessarily gingerbread anymore. And certainly they could do what they want with it. And that's the beauty of Android, is that if they see a need for a feature or see a need of something that's lacking, they can actually build on top of it. And if they want later, they can always go back and module up, you know, into a later version of Android if that gives them what they need. So where, you know, the conversation is here is that when you're on an iOS device, you still have, no matter what you're doing, you have limitations, but you're still in the Apple App Store. You're still being able to interact with certain apps in a certain way, minus what, you know, Flexi ran into with some of its modifications and limitations that it had to run into. So, I mean, there's good and bad sides on either side of this equation. And I wonder if it gets even more complicated when we have Office for iOS, Android, and of course, it's already on the Surface. So if Microsoft Office could change the game by saying, okay, we've made these things accessible either via the web app or through these apps themselves. And with SkyDrive, you can save, so you don't need to do this crazy Dropbox thing anymore. I mean, that could still change the game all the way around and make mainstream devices for us an awesome thing. Across platform, even.
Yeah, I think if Office 2013 continues to not be accessible on iOS or the Mac, to me, that's going to be a major disappointment.
No, we just don't know
Absolutely.
Yet.
Absolutely.
We just don't know yet, because Office 2013 is in Surface and in RT, mostly RT, really, at this time. We don't know about Surface because that isn't really shipped yet. But, you know, Office 2013 as a whole starts becoming general available in January of next year. And that's the thing we've talked about before, where you could subscribe to it and have the ability to put it on 5 devices. And what's been rumored and sort of confirmed by Microsoft is that there are going to be versions of it for iOS and Android, and possibly a new web edition for the Mac, not necessarily updating the client from Office 2011.
Once again, we thank you for all of your comments. Be sure and write to us at resources@saratalk.com. leave us an iReport on your iOS or Android device. You can call the Blab Line, 866-997-2522. Go to sarahtalk.com and leave a comment on our blog. Yes, we do include blog comments in our mailbag. Finally, go over to iTunes and rate the podcast while you're there. It's time now for Roundabout. Let's depart for Ethiopia, shall we? We don't do very many stories from Ethiopia, actually.
No, we don't.
This, to me, is the coolest story ever. I love this. There's an organization called One Laptop Per Child that is interested in making sure that literacy increases among children who don't have a lot of access to the written word and that sort of thing. And they took 1,000 Motorola Zoom tablets, went to Ethiopia, taped them up in a box, and basically just kind of dropped them off in this village and just said, okay, kiddos, play with these, you know?
Here you go. Open the box if you want. See what's in there. Bye-bye. This is something of a departure from how this used to be done, where they would actually have people coming in and training them on how to use the computers and saying, this is what you should learn as you're looking at these computers and so on. So, yeah, definitely a departure there.
So the first one, these are solar powered, by the way. The first one was turned on in about 4 minutes. The first child figured out how to do that. Apparently, there must be some really interactive software, and this article kind of gives some examples. These kiddos learned how to read, learned some English words. Within 5 months, I really like the line in the article that says that some idiot, either in the organization or in the media lab, had disabled the camera on this laptop. They hacked the software and figured out how to enable the camera.
That's so cool. This is just, like you said, the best story ever. And what I love about it is that there's really a lesson here. The kids learned how to learn, right?
Right.
They weren't just presented with a lot of things that they took in, had by rote, and then just went on. They really had to use some problem-solving skills. They had to be curious about what this thing could do, and they were motivated. The more they learned, the more they figured out that, hey, there's way more to know here, and that is very exciting educationally. You know,
so
you're not just sitting
there.
Take
that, older people wanting to learn Windows 8 like me.
It's too hard. I can't do it. I refuse to try.
I don't want a phone that has no buttons. Get
off my
lawn. I'm
just going to throw this tablet at you and now go figure it out.
Totally takes apart the Gods Must Be Crazy, that classic movie where the Coke bottle drops in the middle of a populated area that's never seen one before. And it's a great movie if you ever get a chance to take a look at it. There's a lot to be said about information wanting to be free. You know, individuals showing their children iPads and people just sort of, you know, grabbing onto it. And certainly the generation that's growing up now, I mean, think about it, man. The kids today will never have to know what it's never been like not to be able to call anybody at any point or any time. I mean, that was Star Trek: The Next Generation comm badge stuff for us in the 80s.
Yeah.
So were iPads. That's another thing entirely. You know, so maybe that means the Lacars system will kick in. Oh, look, another EOL moment. Drink. So there's interesting stuff there. But why can't I then figure out boot camp on my Mac? If these guys can figure out how to hack a camera, I've got to sit down and really. This really says a lot about my abilities as a technologist. Oof, oh well.
Yeah. So any resemblance to the science fiction book The Diamond Age is not coincidental, apparently.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Nice.
This is, in fact, inspired by that book.
So. Very cool. Yeah, if you've never read Neal Stephenson, you really should.
I have so much reading to do and so little time. I used to be such an avid reader, and man, it's hard to. I need to give up something. I just haven't quite figured out what yet. The
What's
news,
funny
maybe?
Is,
there's a
oh,
there
you go. Yeah, you want to give up your just give up the employment. Yeah, that'll free up a lot of time. I'm reading The Disney War, and it's so ironic that I'm reading this, and then the whole story about Disney buying Lucasfilm. And it falls right into what I'm reading about Bob Iger and Michael Eisner and all the things that happened with Roy Disney. So we didn't intend this to be a book segment from EOL, but we're always interested in what you guys are reading too. But every once in a while, I choose to read one nonfiction book a year, and this is my nonfiction book. And I love reading about companies and what they do and how they sort of put all that stuff together. So it's very interesting that this comes at a time in which a galaxy far, far away is in a land of a small, small world.
We're coming close to the end of our podcast. Joe, do you want to take a minute? Maybe we can talk about what's coming up in the next month or two on Sarotalk and SPN a little bit. We've got some stuff happening.
Oh, gosh. I would love to say that it's gotten slow. You know, that period between convention and ATIA where no news happens. Well, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that's not true. It's
not
been busier than ever. And we think that'll continue on. We've got a possibility of a special on Windows 8 to talk about that. We'll probably revisit the whole mobility portion of the podcast that Mike Calvo did a couple of months ago, because Ricky and I have Nexus 7s. Mike's got the Surface. And of course, we still have lots of stuff still to come out on Windows, on Mac, on Google, you know, that other company, that third company.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then we start getting ready for this year in AT. Yeah, I know it's crazy, but we're actually about 2 months away from covering the year in tech. So if you have stories that you think were really important or something that we've covered, head on over to www.sarotalk.com. And let us know what you thought was the biggest story of the year from that list over there, because that's where I'll be compiling it. Also, if you have any little bits that you've liked that we've done over the last year, let us know about that too, because we're kind of sort of looking at some of our biggest moments. And of course, Derek and Patrick will be doing some of our stupidest moments in the outtakes. So we still have the outtakes to put together. So November and December actually end up being some of our busiest times, because we're trying to do a lot of podcasts all at once. And so that way we can cover you during the holidays. And of course, that Android show and High Contrast and Triple Click Home. And of course, go check out the new Sarospectives that has just launched. All of that available on the front page of iBlink Radio, either on iOS or Android.
That's going to do it for this episode of Sarotalk. I'd like to thank you once again for joining us. Thank you for all of your comments. Patrick's going to tell you how to get a hold of us at the end of the show. But until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Sarotalk. Visit us at www.sarotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@sarotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.